Welcome to Off the Bench with Danny Cannell.
Back to throw, first and 10, the pass to his tight end.
And Rajah Bell.
Bell has done something. 22 to Rajah.
Saw the future of football right before your eyes. Just yell it out, man. He can't guard me.
What is going on? Happy Monday. Welcome to Off the Bench with Danny Cannell and Rajah Bell. We got a loaded show to get to today. 8 NBA playoff games over the weekend, 8 NHL playoff games over the weekend. We're going to go real deep into the NHL things. And is there trouble brewing in New England? We're going to get to all that later. But let's get right to it with here's what's happening right now. All right, late night hoops last night as Houston escaped game one with a 3-point victory over the Minnesota Timberwolves with help from none other than soon-to-be MVP James Harden. The Beard poured in 44 points, including 7 threes, to start the Rockets' championship quest with a win. Andrew Wiggins, the Wolves' leading scorer, had 18, and Karl-Anthony Towns only had 8 points. The Rockets look legit.
Defensively, but offensively, there were some struggles there. They don't look like they're clicking on all cylinders. Timberwolves could have taken a little bit more advantage. I agree with the TNT broadcast. They should have exploited the post a little bit more on some of those switches. So that's concerning from their perspective. But the Rockets have to be playing good offensive basketball to win. And while James Harden was great, the rest of the team struggled last night, in my opinion. Elsewhere in the West, OKC looked good, claiming game one, 116-108 over Utah. Paul George with the self-proclaimed alter ego, Playoff P. He gave that to himself because he struggled mightily in past years and he just needs another look. But he did it, 36 points, 8 threes. Meanwhile, Russell Westbrook chipped in with 29 points, 13 boards, and 8 assists. Jazz rookie Donovan Mitchell puts up 27 and 10, but they fall short in OKC.
I got a secret for you. I actually put some money on OKC to
really?
Win
and Playoff
title,
P?
To win the title at 50-1 odds.
Where are we going?
If it hits, we're going to prime 112, baby. So I'm going to keep an eye on those guys for sure. All right, sources out west. There is trouble. It's still in San Antonio. Still some issues. Sources say Kawhi Leonard not expected to rejoin the Spurs at any point during the postseason. It appears like it's going to be a brief stay. On Sunday, San Antonio coach Greg Popovich reiterated that Kawhi isn't on the court because he hasn't been cleared by his own medical team. Leonard remains in New York and not with the team as the drama continues.
It's a bad look all the way around. They're going to get smoked by Golden State. They've overachieved all year. I mean, another credit to Pop and what he's able to do with what he gets out in San Antonio. But the Kawhi situation is a mess. It's going to get uglier before it gets better. And it's a shame because, you know, he's one of their own. He was drafted. He was raised. He was developed there. They've just got a mess of a situation on their hands out there.
No doubt.
All right, let's move to baseball. Bartolo Colon, big sexy, quite flirtatious on Sunday night. The 44-year-old Rangers pitcher took a perfect game into the eighth inning. It's only against the defending World Series champ Astros. Colon would have topped Nolan Ryan as the oldest to throw a no-hitter or perfect game if he sealed the deal. Texas ultimately won in extras.
So when you look at Tom Brady, you're like, how does he do it at his age?
Yeah.
Bartolo Colon, there's no question, like, how does he do it? Because it's not his diet.
Right, right.
He's fat and, like, he's not ascribing to the Tom Brady way of life.
Yeah.
But somehow he keeps getting it done. That's the difference in baseball and football for you, I think, right there, especially being a pitcher. All right, in New England, the 2018 offseason Rob Gronkowski saga continues. Apparently, he's still deciding whether to play or not. The Pats tight end will not attend the start of New England's offseason program today. Gronk just alone is not enough drama, though. Tom Brady also, he's out. He was on a business trip in Qatar. He was not there either. What goes on a business trip in Qatar?
I mean, you've got to have some big business in either.
Yeah.
You're in Qatar or Qatar. There's some big things are gone. Yeah. But, you know, this Pats way, I guess we're going to get into it a little later in the pod, but there's some stuff there. And look, Rob Gronkowski, you know, for all the hits that football's taking, it's a grueling sport in and of itself, like during the regular season. Those extra miles on your body and OTAs and non-mandatory stuff, like if I were playing football, I'd skip half that stuff too, especially if I've been there, done that.
Heck,
what we're doing. I'm out.
Yep.
How about the Las Vegas?
Yeah, how about them?
How about that? Three third period goals lead them to a commanding 3-0 series lead over the Kings. Vegas has yet to lose a playoff game in their – franchise history. What do you say about that?
Look at that. Unbelievable. That's our NHL recap right there. All right. Let's move on to what we learned over the weekend. All right. First up, we learned that the East won't be a cakewalk for the Cavs as the Pacers dominated them 98-80. It wasn't even close. LeBron previously had won 21 straight first round one games, and that streak is no longer anymore. They were dominated. It wasn't even close.
It wasn't close. I think when people look at like NBA, NFL, like major highest level sports, they can tend to overthink it. Like they just do. And the essence of sport is if I come out and want it more than you and I play harder than you, I'm probably going to beat you. Mm-hmm. Provided you're comparing apples to apples in terms of talent, which quite frankly with LeBron, sometimes you're not. But this year, because of his supporting cast, you kind of are. So you clearly saw a Pacers team that was more motivated, more focused, and came out more ready to play than the Cavs, and that will get you down 21 points real quick, which is embarrassing. On your home court in Cleveland, that's embarrassing. And then, you know, I worry about them going forward. I mean, I still had them, and I guess I still will when push comes to shove, say that LeBron gets out of the East just because history tells me he will, Danny, but that is ugly, and if he's not going to get help from that supporting cast, it's going to get uglier.
So I was watching this game, and after the first quarter, I kept thinking, much like I thought all season long, I'm like, they'll be fine. They're going to work it out. So I actually took a bet on the Cavs after the first quarter because they got 3.5 right. for the rest of the game. So I'm right. like, hey, they entered, you know, 5-point favorite. I'll get them as the underdog. They tried to mount little surges, and they had a couple little mini runs where they'd cut into the lead a little bit. But Indiana was having none of it.
Right.
And that, to me, has always been the thing. And it's been – I think you hit on something there because I think we make a big deal out of every – and that's kind of what we do in today's media. But, like, if this was the Warriors, you're saying, oh, they'll be fine because they have more talent. They can just show up. Yeah. I don't know if the Cavs are that talented.
They're not.
Like, that's my biggest – outside. And it wasn't LeBron's fault. Like, LeBron had a pretty solid game, like, as far as his standards go. He still had the triple-double, still had 24 – it wasn't on him. It was in all those new pieces that are surrounding him.
Yes, I agree with you 100%. And it started, we were watching a highlight before of Lance Stephenson early in the game coming right down the middle and dunking on Jeff Green.
Yeah.
You don't let that happen if you're Jeff Green. Like, you send a message in the playoffs that this paint is a no-fly zone. I mean, there are little subtleties that if you're a good playoff basketball player from the Cavs, like, side of it, you would have taken care of. And that was one of them. That's a statement. You're coming down my lane. He's not an explosive, high-flying dude. That you just take him out of the air. Put him to the ground, flagrant if you need to, but that's not going to happen in our house today. And I always say this about LeBron's teams, and this is when you're playing with fire when you've got LeBron on your team. He doesn't care about the regular season. He makes no mistakes about that. He tells the whole world. He cares very little about what happens in the regular season because he knows that he can flip that switch. And I would caution LeBron. The teams that you've been able to do that with have been very, very good teams. Aside from you, you've had multiple All-Stars on those teams. And so those guys might be able to flip a switch. But now you're dealing with a team where you don't have a peer. Like, Kevin Love is great, but he's not your peer. Like, he's a level below you. Not all of those guys are going to be able to flip that switch. You saw it last night. They tried to do it, and they could not get it done.
So, panic meter, if you're a cat.
I'm in full panic mode.
But you thought, didn't you, to correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't you think Indiana would give them a little bit of a fight, or no? Did you have the Cavs in four or five?
I think I probably had them in five. I don't remember exactly what I said.
Are you changing that? You had Cavs in five coming in.
I do think that the Cavs will win the series. But what this is showing me is that I don't know that I was right in having them coming out of the East. I think they'll beat Indiana. But it's danger Will Robinson in terms of getting out of the East.
Right. What's funny is I've always looked for a team that could beat them, and as everybody has, and you're always looking at Toronto, you're looking at Boston, and now we're seeing Indiana giving them a run.
They're 4-1 against them this year.
Right.
They are. I mean, they're young. They spread you out. Cleveland is horrific defensively. There's not like Oladipo is fantastic, but they got a bunch of guys that could get you like 17, 18 points. They might be the recipe of a team, like the blueprint that you would need to really be a problem for the Cavs.
All right, next up for what we learned. We learned that the Warriors can indeed survive for now without Steph Curry. I don't know if we learned anything about the Warriors, to be honest with you, because the Spurs were the perfect matchup without Kawhi.
Yeah.
It's not the Spurs team of old. It's not the dynasty. This team is undermanned. You saw the frustration in Pop's voice after, like saying, what do you want me to do? You know, are we gonna play? Is Kevin Durant not going to be the best, one of the best players in the world? No, that's not going to change. So I actually don't know if we learned anything about the Warriors.
I think you learned that, like, the suspicions that they were just frustrated, I mean, not frustrated, but bored with the end of the regular season were confirmed, right? That's what that is. They were just kind of bored. Everyone wanted to point to their team falling apart. I heard someone say that the Spurs were going to beat them in a playoff series. Like, people were completely...
Delusional?
Delusional, yeah. That's ridiculous. That team has been to three straight finals. They've played into late June, mid-June for the last 3 years of live basketball. It was natural that they'd be bored at the end of that season. They're going to be fine. The only time that Steph Curry is going to become a problem for them is if they get the Rockets or OKC in the Western Conference Finals. If they should pull one of those two teams, that's the only problem. Not even the finals. They'll win the finals against the Eastern Conference right. team without Steph. But one of those two teams in the West, if you don't have Steph, you have a problem.
So Steph was reevaluated on Friday. He's going to continue his on-court work with running and lateral movement. I've seen some of the videos around. I don't want to say I'm a doctor, but I think he's going to be fine. I think he probably could play in this series if they want him to, but they're like, why yeah. risk it?
Well, and you've made the point before about it, like last year when he got banged up or the year before that.
Right.
You just want to make sure he's 100%
right.
ready to go.
So he'll be back before long. All right, here's what we learned, part three. We learned that Ben Simmons already belongs in the game's elite. I wonder who this was written by. The Sixers had no problem with the playoff stage. Our boy Debo coming up with that script.
I wish he was in the room with us.
Blast him on here if you want. Oh. So they did blow out the Heat. They were trailing by four, but they turned on the Jets at halftime. They won 130-103. They did look good. The Heat did not look very good. Did we learn anything about the Sixers?
Yeah, the Sixers are for real.
Yeah.
Like, and I mean, I we learned something about the Sixers. They're for real. They spread you out. I mean, see, they are the antithesis of the Cleveland Cavaliers. Those kids are up. They're defending. They're in your face. They're taking away passes. They're hungry. And that's a kind of cool thing to watch. I would always, like, when I was with the Cavs and I'd be in the front office and I try to articulate to, like, David Griffin the difference between, like, defensively, because he'd watch them and be like, hey, it looks like they're playing defense. And I'm like, yeah, there's a difference between playing defense and giving a guy like this much space, which is like 3 feet essentially, or playing defense and giving a guy a foot. That changes everything for the offensive player, right? His decision-making is sped up. Like, he's uncomfortable. And the Sixers play, they give you a foot. They're taking everything away. They're in pressure mode. And that just changes what you do offensively. They're better at playing the type of game that they played in game one than the Heat are. I believe, and like I said last week on the pod, the Heat have to go through Hassan Whiteside. And this is a beef between Eric Spoelstra and Hassan Whiteside right now. It's taken on a life of its own. It doesn't get a whole lot of credit or media play outside of Florida. But it's ugly because he is a dominant big man. I don't love his game, but you are going to get beat against the Sixers trying to do what the Sixers do. They're better than you. They've got better personnel. The Ben Simmonses of the world, the J.J. Reddicks of the world, the Covingtons, the Markelle Fultz, they're better than you at that. You have to figure out how to put differences aside and go through Hassan Whiteside and beat up the underbelly of that Sixers defense while Embiid is out. When he comes back, if you want to make the argument that you got to, you know, match up another way, fine. But while he's out, you have to decimate the interior of that defense, and they're not doing it. So you're going to get beat.
No, Hassan Whiteside was non-existent practically. Only had 2 points in 12 minutes. This one, it's interesting because they're doing this without Joel Embiid, and I think they could almost, it feels like, especially after the win they had then, they can have the luxury of waiting until Joel Embiid is 100% because he's cleared his concussion protocol. He's still going to have to wear that mask, which he's wearing. But if you're them, why rush him back? Especially with a player who has an injury history like him, you might as well just take your time.
The playoffs are fantastic for a lot of reasons, but like the complexion of a series changes so drastically from game to game. Like, you know, everyone's having these knee-jerk reactions. Like, say the Heat got blown out by whatever they got blown out by.
Right.
Well, that all goes away. You come in and you steal a game, too. Like, you've won that part of the series. Do you know what I mean? Like, the same with the Milwaukee Bucks. Like, you got beat, but if you eke out game two, you are the winner in terms of the first two games because you leave with the home court advantage flipped in your favor. And as far as those injuries go, like a Steph and an Embiid, every game that you get, you bank on a more rest for said player. So you're just watching the series unfold, and if you don't need him, you don't play him, and it buys him more rest. So you're actually, you know, that's a motivational tool for a team. Like, look, go out and win this. We get more rest for Embiid.
All right. So we talked about at the beginning of the show, the Patriots.
Yeah.
Gronk is a no-show, and there is a lot of drama. So I feel like there's a race to always be the guy who says, there it is, the dynasty's over. There it is, Tom Brady's done.
Right.
For the first time, because I've always defended the Patriots, been like, nope, until I see it, I'm not going to believe it. But I do feel like there's
some chinks.
Yeah, I feel like there's some problems cropping up where maybe it is. Maybe the run, which has been incredible, maybe it is. Because they have won five Super Bowls. They've been to eight in the Belichick era. But the players, and it's kind of 2018. It's what we do. Players are more outspoken. They're more vocal. They are speaking up. So you got Gronk, who says he won't be there. He's still contemplating his future, which goes back and forth. Danny Amendola did a sit-down with ESPN, and he said, quote, talking about Bill Belichick playing for him, it's not easy, that's for sure. He's a bleep sometimes. There were a lot of things I didn't like about playing for him, but I must say the things I didn't like were all in regards to getting the team better, and I respected him. So that's one player, prominent player. Nate Solder, also another prominent player for the Patriots in their run, wrote a piece in the Players' Tribune. He said he doesn't have any complaints and he's grateful for his time in New England, but he did say, quote, it can be a tough environment. It's very businesslike, and at times it can be cold. Everything in New England is predicated on performance. It's a place where people sometimes treat you differently based on how you practice that day or have you questioned, answered a question in a meeting. One day you could walk around the facility feeling like a Pro Bowler. The next, like you're about to get cut. The Patriots have a standard. The pressure is very real. That's the culture they've built. It's a winning culture, and it's why they've been so successful.
Yeah. It takes certain type of individuals to be able to go through that grind. Not everybody's built for that. I think it's why, you know, you see them being very selective about the type of guy they bring into New England, because they're aware that not everybody is going to flourish in that environment. You know, the NFL is really interesting because when I watch the NFL and the NBA, let's say, the NFL seems like a way more controlling league.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Like, they've got way more control over their players. They got control over the message that their players are speaking out. Like, they just control way more. The NBA, there's more latitude for players. And you've seen a shift. Like, I talked about the Jerry Sloan, Darren Williams thing on our pod. And, you know, I spoke about it on another pod. And the host was like, it sounds like Jerry and Darren's beef was all over a generational gap. And it's kind of nail on the head. It is. And in the NBA, you know, coaches have to adjust way more because the players have more control. They have more say. The NFL, it seems like they've gotten away with some of these guys just being old school, my way or the highway, iron fist. That only lasts for so long. And so to the point you made about, you know, somebody being first to the table with the dynasty being over, it's only a matter of time.
Right.
Like, they're going to wind up with enough guys in there with a voice or enough people leaving there telling about what happens, enough of that's going to happen to where he's got to change or the franchise has to make a move. I don't know how long that is. I imagine once they stop winning championships, if they stop winning championships, it may coincide with like when Tom Brady retires because he's maybe the greatest of all time.
Right.
But at some point that's got to give because you've got a whole generation of player now that isn't cut from the same cloth as Belichick is. And there's going to be differences there. They're going to be irreconcilable differences. And winning cures all. And so when you stop winning, you'll probably start to see that stuff start to really fall apart.
Yeah, I think it all comes down to one thing, that difference in the NBA players and the NFL players and why the NBA players have more control. It's one reason, guaranteed contracts.
Right.
Because in the NFL, coaches will hold over the fact that they can cut you. They'll hold that over your head all the time.
So it's a culture of fear. Like
absolutely. Most teams have that culture. Even like in a 53-man roster, I would say 40 of the guys
are just,
and even those 13 that are set in stone, like the quarterback, you got a couple Pro Bowlers.
That's incredible to me.
Even them, it's kind of on a year to year. Like, you might feel okay because you just came off a Pro Bowl year,
right?
But you better produce every year. It's like the secret sauce of why the NFL is so competitive, why you don't see that many teams that are just atrocious and just give up,
right?
Because they're always holding that contract over your head. And it is a miserable existence. Like, it really is. If you're one of those borderline guys, there's never any security.
Yeah.
There's never any certainty over, hey, I can set up. And it's a miserable existence.
You need to pick another sport, bro.
Right.
Some of those guys need to pick another sport.
And get the guaranteed
NBA money is good money.
And it's guaranteed
money. Like, yeah, I could see from a fan's perspective and an organization's perspective why you would want the non-guaranteed.
Absolutely.
It makes all sense in the world. But from a player's perspective, I mean, to produce in a culture of fear, it could motivate you for a minute.
Right.
But if I'm in fear for my job, it becomes a deterrent at some point. Like, I now have these, like, I have anxiety about doing my job. If I got to perform for my supper every time we go out there, if I have a bad game, I get cut. Like, I would not work well.
Because I was in that situation a lot. I was on that bubble in training camp, and I would go out there and play paralyzed with fear, like, oh, don't throw that interception or you might get cut, which makes you less likely to throw the touchdown because you're nervous and you just want to take the safer throw.
Now you're not – you know, I say this to parents on my team sometimes about, like, they said that, well, my son didn't make any mistakes. I'm like, yeah, but he's not playing the game. He's just out there trying to not make mistakes. There are two different things. Like, not making mistakes and not playing the game is as bad as trying to play the game and making mistakes. Like, you can't just be out there trying not to F up, and that's what you're doing if you're playing for your supper.
Right. The best way to perform is when you're kind of free of that fear. You can go out there, and you don't want to make mistakes, but you're not afraid to take calculated risks.
Right.
That's what it comes down to. The issue with Gronk, I think, is interesting because this whole indecision of is he going to play, is he not going to play, it's going to be – the way this is playing out, I think, is longer than I expected. Like, I thought he would have silenced the critics by now, and the fact that he's still debating it makes me really wonder if he does come back and play.
I think...
And there's got to be a ton of money on the table from WWE.
Yeah.
Like, I think he could probably make really good money being a WWE character, and then you have another career to go to. Because what's Gronk like in reality? What is Gronk going to do after football? Like,
WWE.
Right, exactly. So why not start it now? Because I don't see him going to be like a money manager. He's not going to, you know, going to be an accountant.
If I had to guess, I would say he's coming back this year. It'll be late. He's soul searching right now, I think. But if he has an injury this year or something doesn't go well, this will be the last year. And so next year, this decision will be a lot easier. I think right now he's in that soul searching phase. And from my experience, like, late in that career, it's not that easy to give it up. If you still have something that you want, like, you still have some tread left on the tire, it's not clear that you're done. It's a hard thing to walk away from. Now, clearly, I didn't play football, and I'd have the type of catastrophic injuries that he's had. But I would imagine he comes back this year when push comes to shove. Late, Patriot way, what have you. He sucks it up and he comes back. But then next year, it's a lot easier for him to say, all right, peace, I'm out.
Yeah. I've always said every player that's debating retirement, play until they kick you out.
Yeah.
You know, like, literally.
It's, yeah, you
regret it. You can't ever get it back. It is really tough to get to. Debo, our producer, came up with a little new segment. We call it Socially Relevant.
Okay.
Because there is a lot of social media. Players have a voice more than ever. Sometimes it's great. Sometimes it can be annoying. Sometimes it's just there. So we have to start with a young, outspoken social media guy, and that's Joel Embiid.
Yeah.
So he had an Instagram post just before the start of the postseason, and he used the hashtag Phantom of the Process. And then he proceeds to put pictures on the hypothetical Sixers matchups all the way through the finals, including the Heat, Celtics, Cavs, and Warriors, basically saying, we're going to go through them all.
Oh, word. I see you, Embiid.
You like it?
Visualize the process.
Yeah?
Like, yeah, no, I don't mind it. Like, he's got a playful personality on social media. If LeBron James or somebody does it, it's kind of misconstrued, like,
right,
or
right, is he seriously guaranteeing them
differently? Yeah,
right.
But like, I think Joel Embiid could get away with that.
I think Joel Embiid, if Shaquille O'Neal was in the social media era, he would have been like Joel Embiid,
right?
Like, just having fun with it, talking trash, but not like kind of keeping it playful.
Yeah,
which I'm totally cool with as long as he does that. All right, let's move on to overreaction and proper reaction to some NBA playoff stories. Mm-hmm. All right, the Rockets won't sweep. Is that an overreaction or a proper reaction?
An overreaction. I mean, they didn't look great offensively last night, but they are dynamic offensively when they're firing on all cylinders. And I don't expect – offense is one of the things that can be a night-to-night thing. Like, you can – offense can click back really quickly. Defense sometimes is more cultural, and it's hard to find a rhythm defensively if you haven't been a good defensive team. The Rockets can find the stroke. Those guys won't miss threes like that. I mean, if they do, they'll lose. But they won't miss threes like that every night. Minnesota, though, I said coming in, is a scary team because of all the talent that they have. But D. Rose played out of his mind last night, and they don't seem like tactically where they need to beat Houston. If Houston is going to switch all those pick and rolls, you must punish them in the paint every time they switch and destroy that matchup down low. And they don't seem to really get that. So I think it's an overreaction.
It's a total overreaction because they played awful outside of James Harden and they still won. Like, that to me is a sign that they're actually in better shape to actually sweep, because they're not going to go 3-for-25 again from three. Like, they're good.
Correct.
They're a better shooting team than that. So I think they will sweep and get that extra playoff rest. All right, speaking of playoffs, how about playoff P, your boy Paul George? He is the most important player to the Thunder's playoff success. Overreaction or proper reaction?
That is a proper reaction.
Ooh.
Yeah, that is
not your boy reaction. Russell Westbrook.
No, Russ is what makes that team go.
Right.
But Russ is always kind of fantastic in terms of a number line. Now, Russ's field goal percentage at times can have a is an indicator as to whether they win or lose, but he's always going to be who he is. Having a viable number two or 1B, if you will, is critical to their success in the playoffs. So I don't – he is the most important because I already know what I'm getting out of Russ.
Right.
Playoff P has been up and down this year. And if he's consistent, he doesn't have to be 36 points on 8 for 11 threes. But if he's a consistent 1B or number two to Westbrook, they can have some sustained playoff success. So, yeah, I'd say that's a proper reaction.
How comfortable are you with Paul George, like, thriving in that role?
No, I'm not super comfortable. But, no, I am. No, he's been great in the playoffs. What he doesn't do well typically, and I think the numbers bear this out, is close a game with that game-winning shot. And I don't think he's in the minority. Like, that's a tough thing for guys. You know, I think LeBron struggled with that up front. But Paul George has been great in the playoffs in years past when he used to battle with the Heat and last year when he battled with the Cavs. Like, he had great numbers. He just couldn't close games. So I'm comfortable with Paul George playing playoff P.
All right, next one, overreaction or proper reaction. Al Horford is versatile and good enough to carry the Celtics to a series victory over the Bucks.
That is an overreaction. It's overreaction, but it's kind of proper because Al Horford is a versatile, very good player, and at times good enough to probably lift the Celtics over the Milwaukee Bucks. But I don't think that he's going to be able to carry them to a series win against the Bucks. I don't imagine this is going to be a 4, 5, 6-game series. I think it's long. I think it's drawn out, maybe 6 or 7. And I don't think that over that course of time, Al Horford is going to be able to lift them to victories over the Bucks.
I was probably too flippant about this, saying the Bucks are going to beat the Celtics.
Yeah.
I still feel like they will, but I don't know if I gave enough credit to Brad Stevens and the job he does as a coach.
He's fantastic.
He is really good coach, especially considering the injuries they have. And if it does go 7, they might actually get Marcus Smart back for potential Game 7 if they do get there. All right, next up. Saturday's Game 1 win was what the Raptors needed to exercise their playoff demons. Overreaction or proper reaction? I'll handle this one. That is an overreaction right there because I need to see way more out of this Toronto team than just a game one win against the Wizards. I think this series could go deeper.
Yeah.
But even if they win this series, it's not enough for me to see them do it. Like, it's a question for me until they get to the finals.
Yeah, but I think it's a proper reaction in terms of they needed that.
Yes.
They couldn't come out and lose game one. So I think they needed it, but I'm in your camp with, like, they've got way more work to do in terms of exercising playoff demons. Don't count out. Like, there's just game one at home. Again, Washington wins game two, ekes one out. Washington now has flipped home court advantage, and we're talking about a different series. Like, they're not out of the woods yet.
So Debo just sent me a note, said they had lost the previous 10 game ones of series. So maybe that is a huge, like, mental block, hurdle to get over. All right, the Pelicans are going to beat the Blazers. Overreaction or proper reaction?
Proper reaction. I said it on the pod last week. They're going to beat the Blazers.
Bam.
It's going to be a series. I don't think that game one has made me, like, change my opinion on it. It's going to be a series. Now, I don't think game one wasn't as close as the final score indicated either. Like, the Pelicans were in firm control of that. I think that Lillard and McCollum, as fantastic as they are, when you've got the two small guards in the playoffs that don't really defend, you could have problems. And so I'm going to go with the Pelicans.
Anthony Davis, too, a monster game, 35 points and 14 boards to go along with that. All right, we do. There's a lot of negativity in sports media, so we need to, like, some feel-good stuff.
Oh.
And there was a great story out of Syracuse in their spring game. So they have a quarterback who's actually battling cancer, and he threw a touchdown during their spring game. Pretty cool. He had testicular cancer, and he was coming back for it. And so they got him in the game. Good to see that, too. I mean, there's nothing better for a guy's spirits either than to go out there while he's undergoing, you know, treatment for cancer, than be with his boys and to get to have a moment like that. Really cool moment for Syracuse, and I know Hannah's cheering on for that. Let's finish out strong. Debo, what do you got for us for topics?
Dez Bryant has been throwing up the X less and less in recent years and won't be doing so at all in a Cowboys uniform anymore. On Friday, Dallas released the 8-year vet. Bryant went on a little Twitter spurt, feels a little disrespected, but does he have anything left to offer?
He does have something left to offer, but not at his salary. He was going to cut. It was $12 million salary. He was going to count $16.5 million against the cap. The Cowboys repeatedly went to him and wanted him to take a pay cut, and he was saying, "Nope, I'm not going to do it." And at some point in every player's career, they come to a point where they think they're worth something, and everybody, including their team, is telling them, "You're not worth that much." And it's a harsh reality, and that's where Dez Bryant is right now.
Yeah, I mean,
comes back to those guaranteed money, man.
You can want what you want, but the market is going to dictate what you get. I just think someone is going to wind up with a really good receiver, and clearly not this receiver that he was, but some other team that's in need of maybe that last piece with their receiving core is going to wind up with something falling in their lap.
You know who likes to get players at a bargain?
I do.
The Patriots. I guarantee you, yeah. Bill Belichick's
is
calling him.
Is he a Patriots way guy?
I don't know, because I never thought Randy Moss was. Yeah. Like, I never would have imagined Randy Moss going in there and lighting it up.
Right.
And I think if you buy in and you have a chip on your shoulder and you want to prove to your old team that they were wrong, then you go in there and you play hard.
And if you want to get paid, maybe you let the best quarterback in the world throw you the ball also.
Exactly.
Come back and get paid.
Exactly.
Another receiver a little bit on the downside of his career. You guys know Mike Wallace?
Mm-hmm. Oh.
So he played for the Steelers, Dolphins, Ravens, now on the Eagles. Philly's offseason program begins today, and if he weighs under 250 pounds, he'll receive a whopping $585,000. The thing is, he's listed at 200 pounds. Question is, does he have the greatest agent of all time?
This must have been like a total formality. I don't know why they even have this in his contract. Like, who's going to put on 50 pounds in an offseason? I mean, I guess it's like worst case scenario you're protecting against.
It's salary cap circumvention to it, right? Like, it's money that doesn't have to hit your books if you're – I mean, I don't know technically.
No, that's what NFL, it sounds like.
But yeah, that's a way to get around. It's creative thinking from a GM and an agent. And like, hey,
good for the agent and good for Mike Wallace.
And good for the Eagles.
Right.
It's a win-win-win.
Good for us all. The Marlins will play the Yankees in the Bronx in a few days. The Marlins' new owner also happens to be one of the most popular Yankees of all time. I guess that makes things awkward. Derek Jeter won't be attending games at Yankee Stadium, citing that very reason.
Come on, Jeets. You got to go to the game.
Yeah, what are we talking about? Awkward.
Right? I mean, it's no big deal. Like, get over it.
You get paid to do a job. You got a team on the field. You need to be there. And, like, what? You're one of the greatest Yankees of all time. What do you mean awkward?
He's the captain. Like, New Yorkers love Derek Jeter. There's no way he's going to get booed. He would get received with a warm welcome. Go to the game, get it over with. Because now every time you go back and play there, people are going to be like, well, what? You know, what's going on? Why isn't he here? And then it becomes a story. Just go get it out of the way. It's not a big deal.
I think it's funny that he said, like, it would be taken away from his team. Like, you doing what you're doing right now
is worse.
About you. Yes. Just go to the game and support.
Exactly.
Jeter won't be there for the games happening in a couple of days. Across baseball, weather has been an issue, but this might get Raja a little more invested in what's happening on the diamond.
Okay.
Or actually, the Jumbotron. A delay in Cleveland prompted someone to put up a live game of Fortnite on the Jumbotron.
Yes!
Raja, what are your kind of ideal playing conditions? Are you like being in a dark room? What is it?
Yeah, I like a semi-dark room. I can't have a shadow on the TV because I'm not that good and my eyes aren't great. So I need to be able to see like a nice bright screen. I don't like a lot of chatter around me. So when the boys are around like trying to tell me what to do, it makes me really like anxious and nervous on the controller. So I like kind of quiet, dark room where I can concentrate. My question about the Jumbotron was like, who was playing? Was it like...
That's what baseball needs because they have rain delays all the time is just have a player from each team, have them in their dugout with Fortnite going on and
That'd
put it on
dope.
The jump. And then people have a reason to kind of stick
good,
around.
Because bad Fortnite games are terrible. It's like a veggie burger. Good ones are great. Bad ones are awful.
Well, that's why you got to find out who your best player is. Because I guarantee they'd all be lining up to get up there and play. So you get your best player and they can figure that out in the downtime.
Yeah.
And then the rain delay starts. Players would be praying for rain. They would want. They already are because they like the off day. But they would be out there saying, let me get up there and let me play.
I might cancel my workout in a minute and go play Fortnite.
Yeah. Don't do it. Don't cancel that workout.
Analogy you've made yet. Veggie burger. All right. Yeah. Final topic of the day.
But true.
Destiny's Child reunited at Coachella. Raja, remind you of the 01 finals?
Yeah. Did they get booed?
No.
No.
They booed Destiny's Child in one, like in Philly, I think, for the All-Star game because one of the young ladies came out. They were trying to represent everyone in the league, so one of them had a Kobe jersey on.
Oh.
And they got booed. I mean, Philly's a rough town, but like Coachella, where's, like, you guys know, I don't know.
Cali, man. It's out in the desert. Beyonce, like, headliner. She made history.
Yo, anything Beyonce's involved in is dope. So, like, I didn't see it, admittedly, but.
You know what's not dope? She is trying to control pictures that are taken of her. She only wants approved pictures on the internet.
Really?
Yeah. She wants, because she said she thinks there could be unflattering pictures of her, like people with their cell phones. I have no idea how you're going to police that because people are going to post stuff anyway.
Correct.
But hey, like, let it. You're famous. That's what's going to happen to you. That's part of the territory.
I mean, I lose a little bit. I think I lose a little respect when you start. What do you
right,
care?
You're trying to control the message,
Beyonce,
right?
What do you care?
Hey, I'm with you. All right. So we're going to dive more into the Beyonce situation once we get Hannah back on the show, which she'll be back on Wednesday, we hope. We need the expertise on Beyonce. All right, that's a wrap for us. Thanks for being patient with the show. We're trying something new here with little cameras. Hopefully we have a big announcement to make. We'll see. It depends on how this is reviewed. So who knows? Maybe
we need some makeup in here, though.
Yeah, exactly.
Early.
But we'll be back on Wednesday with the pod. Make sure you follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Danny. That's mine, at Danny Cannell. But at Cannell and Bell, you can follow us. And as always, go subscribe on iTunes. Leave us that 5-star review for our 5-star Q&A on Friday. Thanks for listening.